Second reading is from 1 Kings, in the 12th chapter. Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. When Jeroboam, son of Nebat, heard of it, for he was still in Egypt where he fled from Solomon, then Jeroboam returned from Egypt. And they sent and called him. And Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and said to Rehoboam, "Your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke that he placed on us, and we will serve you." He said to them, "Go away for 3 days and come again to me." So the people went away. Then King Rehoboam took counsel with the older men who had attended his father Solomon while he was still alive, saying, "How do you advise me to answer this people?" They answered him, "If you will be a servant to this people today and serve them and speak good words to them when you answer them, then they'll be your servants forever." But he disregarded the advice that the elder men gave him and consulted with the young men who'd grown up with him and now attended him. He said to them, "What do you advise that we answer this people who have said, 'Lighten the yoke your father put on us'?" The men who had grown up with him said to him, "Thus you should say to this people who spoke to you, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, but you must lighten it for us.' Thus you should say to them, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's loins. Now, whereas my father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions.'" So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king had said. The king answered them harshly. He disregarded the advice the older ones had given him and spoke to them according to the advice of the younger ones. "My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to it. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions." So he did not listen to the people, because it was a turn of affairs brought about by the Lord that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord had spoken by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam son of Nebat. When all Israel saw the king wouldn't listen to them, the people answered the king, "What share then do we have in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Look now to your own house, O David." So Israel went to their tents. But Rehoboam reigned over the Israelites who were living in the towns of Judah. Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim and resided there. He went out from there and built Penuel. Then Jeroboam said to himself, "Now the kingdom may well revert to the house of David. If this people continues to go to offer sacrifices at Jerusalem, the heart of the people will turn against their master, King Rehoboam of Judah. Will turn again to their master, King Rehoboam. They will kill me and return to King Rehoboam of Judah." So the king took counsel and made two calves of gold. He said to the people, "You have gone up to Jerusalem long enough. Here are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." He set one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. In our hearing, our speaking, our living. Thought it would be good at this point to do a quick review of where we've been in the story so far. So we've been using the narrative lectionary now for about 2 months. We switched to that from the Revised Common Lectionary that we've been using for the past 1,000 years. And so the narrative lectionary starts with Genesis and goes through the basic story of the Old Testament, and then during Advent, we'll switch to the gospel, and every year has one gospel, so this will be the year of Mark in a couple of months. But it's trying to give the whole scope and sequence, the story, the narrative of the Bible. So we began back in September with Genesis, with the second chapter and creation, And from there, we dove into the story of Abraham and Sarah and the birth of their son, Isaac. Fast forward a little bit, we then learn more about Isaac's son, Jacob, who was wrestling with God. We took a leap forward several hundred years in time then to Moses and the burning bush and the Ten Commandments. You remember all of this. I know you do. A couple of hundred years more, and we were with Naomi and Ruth. And then finally, last week, Ruth's grandson, David, and David's kingship. David has now died and was succeeded by his son Solomon. Solomon has died, and now we are roughly around the year 925 before the time of Christ, before the Common Era. And in today's installment, the plot thickens. We have Rehoboam, son of Solomon, and Jeroboam. So we're jumping over lots of stories and begats and adventures and misadventures and stuff that's really not proper to talk about in church and all sorts of developments, and it can get confusing. I heard from a friend who teaches college in another town, and she teaches Bible some years, and she last spring was teaching an Old Testament class and got some interesting essays, which she shared. This was my favorite, an essay about the Old Testament. In the year 536, the exile begins, and this is a huge deal. Everyone is exiled, and they don't know what to do or what they did wrong. God does a lot of crazy things in the Old Testament. Parts the sea, sacrifices himself to save us, and rose 3 days later in the Old Testament. God summoned a great flood and saved two of everything. David builds an ark. Everything that happens in the Old Testament leads up to one thing in the end, and I think it's awesome. End of essay. Got it? It can be confusing. But through all of it, God has brought forth life, has initiated life, provided all that was needed for these very real human creatures and other creatures, and the people in particular who are so flawed, but most of the time really trying their level best. It's like a grand experiment. God invites people into this unique relationship, and over again, they just mess it up. And over again, this long-suffering, patient God forgives and says, let's try again. Following David's death, Solomon becomes king. Now, I remember from my religious education as a child, Solomon was lifted up as the wise one. We still talk about the wisdom of Solomon, and he did incredible things. But of course, there's more to the story. Solomon was also at times a cruel ruler. He used forced labor. He amassed unbelievable wealth at the expense of the people, levied extremely high taxes, and then he dies. And his son Rehoboam is young, but he's made king. Jeroboam comes on the scene. Jeroboam was like Solomon's right-hand man, a trusted aide for a time, but fell out of favor and was seen as a threat to Solomon, so he had to flee to Egypt. Well, now that Solomon's dead, Jeroboam comes back. He returns, and this large crowd of the people are before Rehoboam and say to him, they appeal to him, please lighten our burden. Don't treat us like your father treated us. Rehoboam asks for 3 days to think it over. And he goes and he asks the wise elders who had been with his father, and they say, you know, if you lead with compassion, if you listen to them, if you lighten the burden, they'll be loyal forever. But that's not what he wanted to hear. So he goes to his fraternity brothers who tell him exactly what he wants to hear. You don't have to listen to anybody. And they throw in kind of a rather crude remark on top of it, but I'll let you study that at home to figure out what that really meant. But they tell him, you can do whatever you want. And he likes that. So he appears before the people again and tells them, guess what? I'm king and you're not. It's going to get worse and not better. So now the stage is set for division. Tribes of Judah in the south and the tribes of Israel, and Israel in the north, all of which have been united by David, and each of those kingdoms would now eventually be conquered by more powerful nations. The oppressive practices of David and Solomon and Rehoboam are exactly what Solomon warned would happen back when the people had first demanded a king. The hope of the people had been that the king would be one who, as the psalmist said in Psalm 72, delivers the needy when they call, the poor and those who have no helper, has pity on the weak and the needy, and from oppression and violence redeems their life. God and Samuel had said, it's what you want. It's not what's likely to happen. And these rulers were a far cry from the kind of leadership God had set forth as the only legitimate and just type of leadership, the kind of leadership that is servant to the people, that is willing to make sacrifices, that holds the common good up as the ultimate good, that creates an environment for life to flourish for all. So why should we know about this ancient history? Because, as Walter Brueggemann reminds us, through all history there has been this imperial narrative. Tyrants through history hold on to power by convincing people that the alternative to their leadership is utter chaos, that the people must accept the oppressive and self-serving ruler because the alternatives are much worse and they really need to be afraid. And that's what Rehoboam did. Now, some of the kings of Israel were good, some rotten, most a mix of the two, but we see this same pattern all through history. What happens when power is abused? Power by bullying, power by manipulation and intimidation. You can add your own names to the list. I don't have to fill that in. Power that asserts certain people deserve rights, deserve prosperity, deserve to live. Abuse of power results in innocent worshipers being gunned down in a Pittsburgh synagogue. People getting death threats for just expressing an opinion. Abuse of power happens on all sorts of levels in every part of the world. 39 people dying in the back of a truck, children caged on a border still, refugees stranded in ghetto-like camps, and don't even get me started on what's happening in our nation's capital. There appears to be a never-ending supply of people ready to lead by creating fear of the other, demanding total loyalty, amassing wealth and power at the expense of others. We see it, as I said, we see it in families, we see it in communities, we see it in nations. It rears its head over and over. I'm legitimate and you're not. some really foolish evangelical pastor this week decided to lash out at women ministers. You don't want to mess with women ministers. That's just not going to end well for you, honey. Just give it up now. Don't start picking on women ministers. Let me tell you. We got a couple rows full. We're just going to come for you. And it would be easy to just rant. And sometimes you got to just let it out. It's cathartic. But there's a danger in that temptation to divide the world into good people and bad people. If we're honest, we know it's just not that simple. It can be comforting to think there's an us and a them, but to do so is to use the same tactics of those who abuse power. And more importantly, as Jesus taught us in the band U2 sings, there is no them, there's only us. So what do we do with all this painful history, past and current events? There is an imperial narrative, but there is also through all history a prophetic narrative. A narrative that says there's a different way to hold power. There is a different way to lead. It is the way of servant leadership. It is the way of Psalm 72. It is the way of Jesus Christ. So rather than simply ranting about all that's wrong, I decided to look again at 1 Kings and this story. And here's what I found. First is that we've been here before. It may feel to us as though the world is spinning out of control and things are worse than they have ever been, but we have been here before. We know this pattern. God knows this pattern. The second thing I found that was helpful was a reminder that as the prophets told Israel, any form of power that does not enable creation to flourish will fail. Any form of power that does not enable creation to flourish will fail. God had warned them, and it happened. Third thing that I find helpful is the reminder that it is up to us to hold forth the vision of a better way. If we're going to survive, we will have to learn to use power differently. In our homes, in our houses of worship, in our communities, our nation, our world. We will have to honor again the common good. We are learning that more and more as we get involved in discussions and in the work of creation justice, we've learned that we literally will have to use power differently, as in electricity and fossil fuels and so on, but that we as people will have to use our corporate power differently. It's not just up to those who walk in the halls of power, it's up to all of us. African-American minister told the story of growing up in a very, very fundamentalist Church of God congregation that practiced foot washing often. And in this church, they would do the foot washing. They would separate the men and the women so they weren't touching each other's feet. And as a little boy, he would usually dread this because he had to wash the feet of these older men, and it just was icky and he didn't like it, but thinking back, he saw the power of it. He said, I wasn't simply washing their feet, they would come and wash my feet. And I remember as a little boy that registering with me, recognizing that not only was I called to serve these men, they were also called to serve me. Knowing that this community loved me and accepted me and would fight to protect me was deeply reassuring. And that's where I got my sense of dignity and worth and value. By these people who supported me, who loved me and my little body and said, "You are okay just the way you are." That's Jesus' way of power. I saw a meme on Facebook recently. It was a beautiful picture with the quote, "Love lets go of power." And I think that's absolutely wrong. It doesn't. Love is power. Love uses power for the good of others. Love may have to let go of manipulative power, of power over, of power that denies others their humanity. But all of that is in order to make room for the kind of power that loves enough to help all others flourish. And the best news of all I get from 1 Kings is that that's the kind of power God blesses. God will not abandon us, especially when we love. Amen.